Welcome this morning. We're a continuation of our Cover to Cover series. It's going to be a light crowd because it's ministry fair. So some folks that will be here and here and here are manning tables and stuff. And I'm going to try to get you out early so you can have a chance to walk in there and check out some booths, sign up for various things like Life Group if you haven't already, or Mercy's Gate. Check out the Mercy's Gate table, my own shameless plug. And then there's many others. So please check out the tables, talk to the folks there. You know, really kick the tires, haggle with them, you know, make sure they're selling good stuff there, right? So today we're continuing through our Cover to Cover series. So I think last 1st of September, we began with a Genesis lesson, and now we're doing each book of the Bible in succession throughout the Bible. And now, just a few weeks ago, we hit the New Testament, and now we're in our third of the completion of the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, right? And then we'll have John next week. So that's kind of where we are. We're kind of in that time frame of recording the acts of Jesus, the things that he did, the witnesses, those folks that recorded and did that sort of thing. So that's where we are today. And so today I have three kind of purposes with Luke. Kind of talk about how it fits in with the other Gospels a little bit, primarily Matthew, Mark, kind of how they share stories and they have some things that are unique to each and their viewpoints. Then I'm going to kind of hit on some things that are unique to Luke. If you have a favorite parable, chances are it came from Luke. And then finally, we're going to step into not just the historically and just kind of learn about the book itself, but really, what can I take away from this? What is Luke trying to say with his message? And so something that you can apply and think about, so not just say, hey, let's go, you know, hit the facts about the gospel of Luke, but really, how can I apply it and think about it in my life? So the first thing we were just talking here about the writer. So it is an unnamed writer of Luke. It's kind of odd that the gospel of Luke is anonymous. He doesn't say Luke, and he also, we know, wrote a second kind of epitome called the Acts of the Apostles. Also does not call himself Luke in that. He does not say, you know, like our kids, at the, you know, put your name on your test paper so I know who wrote it, right? So they did not do this, right? So who was he? So a lot of tradition, one piece of this is the fragments, the articles we have are probably not the original document. They've been shared and they've been recopied. They, you know, they got small errors, but they're found. The fragments and the things that piece together, Dead Sea Scrolls, etc., wherever these fragments are found, we're probably in the third generation. So it's the third copy of the original Luke, rather, like the actual document he wrote. So we've got this anonymous source. We've got fragments later. So. How do we know that Luke wrote this if he didn't put his name at the top of the paper? How do you think? Why do we call it the gospel?
Tradition.
Tradition, but how did we arrive to that tradition? How did we arrive at that?
Did the early church fathers comment on who wrote the book of Luke?
There's a guy named Eusebius who, like, years later said he just calls the gospel of Luke. Matthew, Mark, Luke. He just says them in succession, and it's the earliest known reference that this one's called. So that is there is fathers of the early church and how they reference these gospels, right? Anybody else?
Couldn't there be some historical documents related to the travels that they incurred, indicating that Luke may have been one of the travelers with Shul?
He was not with, as far as we know, was not mentioned with Jesus. However, so we got the book of Luke, I'm gonna say unnamed. Let's just say unnamed for now. And this is Luke. He also wrote, or the same person wrote Acts. So this is the gospel, unnamed writer gospel. And the biggest hint is that somewhere around chapter 16, maybe even as early as 11, depending on which version you get, there's this term we pops in. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, it wasn't they did this, they did this, they did this. We did this. We got on the ship. We met these people. We said these things. So there's a hint that the writer of these books is in that. By the pronoun, the article, so pronounce matter right, we, in about Acts 16, and throughout, and there are other areas throughout. So if you step out to three other Pauline letters, I'm going to miss one of them. One of them is Colossians. That's one of the bigger ones. One is 2 Timothy, and I forget the other. I just forgot it. There are three other letters that mention, that coincide with this we time frame and the other we's that pop up. And the one that's kind of consistently there is Luke. Right? So if the writer starts saying we, and we know that this Luke character is in all three, chances are it's Luke. Right? So that's why we call it the Gospel of Luke. Is it's pretty good indicator from this like two-layer synopsis, you know, analysis that this we refers to someone and in that group. So Colossians, it says, I'm only here with Luke. And then it's like Luke plus two others. And then it's like Luke and then like six others, right? So he's included in all of these references in these time frames for when we was used in the book of Acts. Does that help? So it's like clues. It's been piecemealed back together. So was he a Jew or Gentile? Prevailing opinion is he was Gentile. If it is the Luke of the traveling companion of Paul, he was a physician, right? Educated. Probably Gentile, because he joined Paul during these, you know, through Macedonia, or they tried to go to Macedonia, couldn't, and he met with him, he sat with him while he's in prison in Rome, and he is probably a Gentile.
May also be a proselyte.
Correct. So most prevailing opinions think that's him. So there's another side that goes, well, maybe. Let's count. So he's a companion of Paul, joins in predominantly Gentile nations, joins his walk. We know, and from the early church fathers, we mentioned that, they think he was born in Antioch. So there's these clues that this is who this guy is. But there's also this other thought of big picture, the message comes through the Jews. Why would a Gentile be writing this? The oracle, this message comes through the Jews. All the other writers, Jews, and we got this one Gentile responsible for 25% of the New Testament. So there's an argument that he was a Hellenistic Jew. And sorry, you're not going to get the answer from me today. I'm showing you both sides. There's good arguments on both sides. Hellenistic Jew. So one of the points here is when they went to a certain town and they had this big uproar, you brought a non-Jew into the temple, and well, they named that person.
It wasn't.
And it's not Luke. It's not Luke. And so was he okay to go in the temple?
He was right. All, you know, if it is Luke that wrote the book of Acts with and traveling with Paul, then he would have gone into synagogues. Mm-hmm. A Gentile would not have been allowed to go in.
Correct. So there's some arguments that if he did not cause a kerfuffle wherever he went, there's also his writings are very knowledgeable of Torah, very knowledgeable of priesthood, priests, lots of references to that, and he doesn't try to explain, well, this is what the priests were thinking. He just says this, like we all know what the priests were doing, right? What they were thinking. And then I think there was one more. We'll get to a second. Oh, it's the next thing, who it was written to, which also, depending on who you're talking to, and how you think of him as Jewish or Gentile kind of plays into this. So who, to whom it was written? So if we look at Luke's purpose, right? Many have undertaken to draw up an account of these things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who were from the first, were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. So who's it written to?
Theophilus.
Theophilus is Luke and Acts, right? So that is, if you look at the original Greek, it is capitalized, if that means anything for a proper name. The term most excellent, a lot of folks are going to say that is what you call, like, it's called twice in Acts where it's like most excellent Festus, most excellent, some person of importance, a person. But Theophilus also means like God lover. Maybe it means generic. Theophilus, you, my audience, you God lover, I'm writing to you. Maybe, so there's an argument it could be either one. There is a known Theophilus, if you do the deep research, there was a Sadducean priest who was shown the door around the time of Jesus' time. It's documented in Josephus. So is this the high priest that was thought Jesus might have been the real deal and was let go? Is that Theophilus ben Annas? It's like Theophilus, you know, son of Annas. So maybe it's him, a specific historical person. Maybe not enough really to go into it. So does that mean he has a closer tie? Being Jewish, he's talking to this Jewish high priest, right? So maybe that's another linkage for this side of the puzzle. So anyway, I leave that all with you to say one or the other. I'll let you pick whichever one makes you feel more comfortable. Go ahead.
It is interesting, though. It's a Greek name, Theophilus, rather than Hebrew. Mm-hmm.
Which reminds me, Luke, another Luke, for that time, was kind of an odd name. So there's another person that pops up in Paul's letters, Lucius. Is Luke the shortened version of Lucius? And he's listed among the, I'm going to mess that up. I think it's the Jewish side. It can be a Jewish name, but it's Greek. It's not a dividing line because you can make an argument on either side. But is Luke short for Lucius, which Paul mentions? And you can make inferences from that. So all of that to say, I don't know, who is he, right? So any other last thoughts on that? But we're going to call it Gospel of Luke. We're going to go with that. But that's a little history, and that's not going to work. So that might be my end of my time at the board. So this purpose he sets out, so a couple of clues from this. There are already accounts being shared, being written, whatever, among us. So I'm not the first, right? So he says, I myself have carefully investigated everything. And so the way I have a visual. This is what I kind of think of when I think of Luke in terms of the Gospels. Anybody know what this is? It's an album, kids. This is an album. We could spit it and music could come out. Does anyone know who made this album? Who produced this album? What company? K-Tel. This is a K-Tel record. It's not like these young nerds who get to go pick whatever songs they like and download them. If you wanted hopefully the one song, your album was full of good songs. And usually they weren't. You didn't like all the songs because they had usually three or five good ideas and then they had filler and you didn't like the filler songs. But K-Tel said, hey, we're going to make albums and it's all the hits. It's a compilation of the good stuff. So they're all from your superstar collection, original hits, original stars. You don't have to go buy 10 albums. We'll take the 10 hits, put them on one album, a good compilation. K-Tel, right? They sold lots of these, right? That's what Luke is. Luke is, I'm going to go research. I'm going to talk to people who saw Jesus. I'm going to go write down from the accounts. I'm going to build the compilation, the best stuff. His is the longest gospel. His has more stuff, right? So think of Luke as the K-tel. He's bringing all the good stuff, the compilation, the best stuff collection. And so among the four, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, three of them kind of tell the story in a similar way, try to be chronologically sound, share a lot of the same details. And then John's kind of his own thing, way different perspective in a sense, and the way he writes and the way he refers to things is different. But you've probably heard this part. They each have their own voice of what they see in Jesus, what they try to bring out and kind of make a connection of. Matthew tries to explain he is the Messiah. He is the promised one. He is the chosen one. And that's what's replete in his references that Jesus called that out, the Old Testament references. Mark shows more of the suffering servant, talked about in Isaiah, and he shows more of that kind of flavor. Mark's probably the earliest one, right, that was shared, we think, but that's also depending, you know, we're using second, third generation texts sometimes, but Luke is really the Son of Man and showing humanity. So the Son of Man portion and how Jesus presented himself shows the humanity of him. And then John really speaks to the divinity. He is the Son of God. And so each of these Gospels has their own flavor, their own perspective, and their differences in the way they refer to Jesus, the things they highlight, right? Anyone not heard of this? Everybody seen this before? Pretty common knowledge? Okay. All right, so that's kind of what we talk about with Luke. You're going to see more humanity, caring for the poor, the lost, the sick, right? Phil probably did this last week. So this is, if I look at the Synoptic Gospels, what this really, as a analyst, what this doesn't show is the volume. If Luke has more, I would expect a bigger pie chart. Mark's smaller, so whatever. But it's how they share material. That's the key point. And so unique to Luke, Luke has a lot of unique material. Mark does not have a lot of unique material. It's captured in the other Gospels, right? Like I said earlier, Luke and Acts, those two books by, I think it was by page count, but in terms of the New Testament, it's like 20, it's a quarter of the whole New Testament. So he, this one person wrote two things, and it's a quarter of what you see in the New Testament. And you can see the shared, the triple tradition, which it's all in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. You see the things that are shared between Mark and Luke, just 3%. Which comprises like 1% of Luke, and then the double tradition, a lot of Matthew, Luke sharing. So just more of a gee whiz thing, but it does show some of the linkages, that some of the things, you know, if you think it, if it's in all three, probably a pretty good thing to highlight and pay attention to, but it's also, if you think about it, other, as he said, other things have been written, other accounts have been shared. I'm doing my thing, and I'm a learned physician. I'm going to go through, and from the beginning, I'm trying to make kind of the big compilation, and so his is the largest, and he has a lot of unique things that were probably captured with talking to other folks after these folks have already written. So kind of a chronology thing and content shaper. Okay? Any questions on this? This make anyone's head hurt? Is everybody grasp pie charts? Pie charts are like sometimes the worst thing. They're like not the go-to, right? So what's unique to Luke? So he has, as he said, this is my purpose. I have a more detailed accounting. He talks about the births of John and Jesus, not sometimes mentioned in the others, but way more detail. Way more detail. In fact, it's like a parallel. The story of John the Baptist, the parents being approached by an angel, it comes true, and then he is named as the messenger. Jesus, approached by an angel, comes true, he becomes the Messiah, right? And so those two parallel stories have lots of parallel items in them between John and Jesus. Yep.
Related to the birth of Yeshua, if you take Luke, you can actually with a little bit of extracurricular information, you can get a timeline as to when Yeshua's birth was.
Yeah, there's some good hints, for sure. And it even talks about his childhood, talks about him that others don't even get to. So when he says, I went back to the beginning, no kidding, I went back to the beginning. More detail on the birth, more detail on childhood. His genealogy, different than Matthew, goes all the way back to Adam. It doesn't stop at Abraham. It goes even further. So from the beginning, the compilation. Right? The road to Emmaus, so even stuff later. It's kind of mentioned in one of them, but Luke, he tells the full story. That whole kind of it burned in our belly kind of thing. And then there are some interesting details in Passion Week. Some things, the sweat is blood, that comes from a Luke passage. And then his actual, if you try to recreate it, and the final word, final words, Father, into your hand I commit my spirit, that's probably the last thing he said, that he breathed his last. That comes from Luke. So a cradle to grave kind of approach. Like I said, if you have a favorite parable, it is probably found in Luke. Good Samaritan, prodigal son, rich man and Lazarus, persistent widow, and others are not in the other gospels, which to me is amazing. The Good Samaritan is only in Luke. The prodigal son is only in Luke. Until I studied this, I had no idea. I just thought this was like, these are big chunk parables. They are only here. So good thing for us, Luke took the time to go do the compilation, right? That album I didn't have, I got the song, right? He has more encounters. Zacchaeus, Pharisees, a lot more interaction with Pharisees and law experts. And then women, a lot more references to women. Specifically, the genealogy includes women, where Matthew's does not, it's all men. This one has Rahab and other women. And he has a special focus on the women he names throughout, like Joanna, stuff like that. So he's probably more comprehensive, more complete, cradle to grave. So that's, in a sense, more or less what is unique to Luke.
Womb to tomb.
What's that?
I would say womb to tomb.
Yeah, right. And more things about the tomb, the folks that are there, the accounts there. So just a lot more detail. So even things that are overlap, there are more detail found in Luke than in the other gospel, the synoptic gospels, right? Any other questions, thoughts here? Like I said, I'm sorry, I'm kind of rushing, but trying to get started early. So another thing about Luke, you know, we kind of talk about the cover-to-cover series. You know, we start Genesis. Genesis is like self-contained. It doesn't really reference much at all because it's the first. As you go through, you start pointing back, right? And so all of these gospels look to, and Luke is very interested in the fulfillment of things, how things were fulfilled, they came true. So it points back to the Old Testament a lot. And some of the key ones that, you know, some of the, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they all have things they point back to. Some of the key ones that Luke, you know, he hit John the Baptist hard, like really spelled out who that person was, his birth, etc. Well, he has a lot of Malachi references because that final book of the Old Testament, right, before things kind of went silent, speak to this person coming in the spirit and power of Elijah that we later understand was John the Baptist. So naturally, the person that spends more time on John the Baptist has references back to Malachi. And sort of like we talked about in this kind of discussion, a lot of woes and discussion about the Pharisees and experts in the law with a kind of understanding of how they were missing the mark. So there's more references back to, you were told this, you were told this. You know, things are coming true, that sort of thing. So Genesis, 2 Chronicles, a lot of Deuteronomy, of course, Leviticus, Psalms, Isaiah, a lot of Isaiah talk associated with Jesus and him being Messiah. And then another good example is the final words of Jesus taken from Psalm 31, into your hands I commit my spirit. So direct Psalm 31. You know, Jesus says that. He's even in his mind as he's dying, he's thinking about Psalm, right? He's using that language. And there are many more, but these are some of the highlights, and a lot of those are overlapped allusions, direct references, direct quotes that other gospels would share. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Because they're all pointing back. Saw a video this week where the kind of debate you don't want to get in, but there was an argument. Which is more important, the Old Testament or New Testament? That's not an argument. It's not an argument. It's a dumb argument. Because the New Testament, without the Old Testament to point back to, is then what got fulfilled. It's just, you're just saying things. So in the Old Testament, without the New Testament coming true, all these prophecies, what do they mean unless they came true? So it's like, it's a complete thing. It's just a bad argument to argue over which is more important, the New Testament, Old Testament. They're both important, and they are hooked and reliant on each other. So in the interest of time, I did not share the Bible Project video, so a little plug there. The Gospel of Luke on the Bible Project, if you go to YouTube, part 1 and 2, kind of step through the whole book. And a lot of this comes down to the key takeaway from this is that Jesus throughout this, and it's specified throughout the Gospels, but also in, you know, pretty with his humanity, what he kind of points to, Jesus speaks to an upside down kingdom where the values of the kingdom are different than our values, right? And the elements of this upside down kingdom are radical generosity. How we treat wealth, how we treat money, how we look at others. Servant leadership, it's not about power. The first will be last, the last will be first. Peacemaking, even among your enemies, even those that seek to do harm, peacemaking. Forgiveness is a key thing, just as God forgave us. That's the mindset I should have, forgiving others. And the way I forgive others, reminder, that's how God's going to forgive me. So forgiveness is key at a heart. A deep piety, so, you know, being knowledgeable of who God is, recognizing his holiness and not being flippant about that, and also rejecting religious hypocrisy. If it came from God, it makes sense. If you pervert it, tilt it a little bit, it's not going to make sense. So speaking out when something doesn't make sense. This is not what you were called. This is not how Jesus wanted you to, or God wanted you to respond. And so this message throughout gets back to this upside down kingdom. So if you have time, I think each is like 8 minutes. So part one, part two, encourage you to go watch the Bible Project. If we had more time, I would show them today, but some things to get to. So that's more or less the story of Jesus inside of Luke. If you want to extend it to the other gospels, it makes sense as well. All of these things are key to this kingdom that he's talking about. So now we're to the third part. So we'll go through this quickly. We kind of worked on this last week in the other lesson series in the culture of the church. So I thought I'd make it easy, copy paste, lather, rinse, repeat. But so we're going to look at one of the parables. It's only in Luke. No other. It's not Matthew, Mark, whatever. And the parable of the Good Samaritan. And it opens with a question. In this part, the question and the answer are pretty much the same across the gospel. Luke answers a follow-on question with a parable. So let's go to Luke 10. And I'll read this. So that's the structure. It's a question and answer, which, again, points back to the Old Testament, of course. And then the second question, a follow-on question. So let's read this. Luke 10, I think it starts in 25. Here we go. So 25. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. So he went up and stood up to test him. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Well, what is written in the law? How do you read it? And that's Jesus' question back. He doesn't answer it. He poses another question back to the teacher of the law. And he answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this, and you will live. But he, the teacher of the law, wanted to justify himself. So he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? In reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, when he was attacked by robbers, They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said, "and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have." Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." So, because timelines on the Gospels are kind of all over the place, this one took place, this question, Luke 10, kind of early. I think Luke has 27 chapters. Early in his message, in his ministry, we notice that the teacher of the law asks him the question. Jesus says, "How do you interpret it?" Right? In the Matthew, Mark, later, Passion Week, a similar question is asked. What is the greatest commandment? Jesus answers it. He doesn't ask a question. He answers it with this answer. Two totally different ways of, very similar, two different questions, the same answer. In the first, Jesus doesn't respond. I would say that you could argue that early in his ministry, he's trying to show them, I like you, listen to Moses, listen to the law. So how do you take it? Well, I think it's this. Well, you're right. We agree, right? It's the right answer. Later, he gives the answer, and it's the same answer. So that portion of the overlap between the Gospels is very similar, but it's not the same. The follow-up, who's my neighbor question, is where the parable comes in, and this is only in Luke. And so, you know, he starts off with the two folks very venerated in the Jewish culture, the priest. You know, there's nobody better than priests. They are living it, right? They are the good guys. And then the priest lets them down. He passed about on the other side. Well, he was probably busy. He was probably clean, didn't want to get unclean. He's got things to do. He probably needs to be ceremonial. He's probably going to see a widow or go give alms of poor or something. So, we'll give him a pass. Well, the Levite. Well, Levite is kind of the same as a priest in a sense. But probably not on the same timetable. he's got time, surely, and he doesn't. Right.
Well, both of them have just finished serving in the temple, so they're coming back home from the temple.
Yeah, it's going from Jerusalem up here, high up to down to Jericho, very like Dead Sea, low place. So they're going back to away from the center, the temple. So chances should be they should have had some free time to do this, but they both walk on the other side. And then he says Samaritan. And Samaritan is like the lowest kind of person you could be in the eyes of the Jews. It's like, not only did they originate from the northern kingdom that like set up golden calves and kind of got carried off into exile first, they kind of lost it. They were not as good as say the southern kingdom. You know, they had no good kings. They were all bad, all poor. And then when the Assyrians came in, they kind of interbreed. So it's kind of half Jew, half Assyrian. So in their eyes, they're like this mongrel half-breed. It's a racial kind of thing, right? Yet, and we're going from Jerusalem to Jericho. Not a lot of Samaritan. So this guy's out of his element. He's traveling through Jewish territory.
Right.
So why didn't he stay at the inn? He's probably not allowed to stay at the inn. Why did I take him to the inn and not to someone I know? I don't know
people
around here. So I poured out oil, I poured out wine. The inn truly will take him, not me. He's probably one of them. I can't stay here. Takes him to the inn, here's some money, take care of him, I'll come back and check in on him. Whatever he costs, I will pay it. But I can't stay here. That's how poorly they would be recognized here. So that's kind of the intent of this parable. And really what Jesus is doing is he's holding up this mirror, right, to the teachers of the law. You're thinking about this kingdom in a certain way. What do you think now? And they have to go, oh, it's the other guy. The guy I never would have said. That I didn't even think could be that good is the one that's the neighbor. And these other two guys who I've been around, like I give them the special seat in the hall. I want to be that guy, right? That's who I go to for advice. And they didn't. They didn't help out. So I have to rethink my...
The Torah expert, he couldn't even say man from Samaritan. He couldn't say Samaritan. He just, it's not a word they could say. That's how disgusting they were.
Right. So the challenge here today is, let me go through this first. So these have a direct, these are New Testament passages. They have a direct correlation to this love your neighbor as yourself. They're foot stomping and show you how what kind of perspective that is. But indirectly, there's so many variations of this statement. It is to love one another. Love one another. It is not selfish. And then, you know, if you look at the Lord's Prayer, first and foremost, it's about God, his hallowed name. That's our heart. God is first. The rest of it is about thanking God for things we receive. Not I receive, we. If you go look at the Lord's Prayer, a lot of us. It is not me. So think about that when you pray. This whole hierarchy, this upside down kingdom, it's in the template of the prayer. It's in these statements. It's in this parable. Loving others, loving our neighbor is super, super important in this kingdom. And so we need to reflect. Put that mirror up to ourselves. What are our biases, our prejudices? The folks that we think are less than, who do we think is more than? What's our hierarchy? Challenge yourself on flipping it. Is it in the right order? Am I considering these people? Am I thinking about who's my neighbor? Do I naturally gravitate and treat some people well? Do I treat some people poorly? I don't care who you are. I can give fruit. I can be generous. I can spend time with you. I can do whatever. When you put this mirror up, to yourselves, don't be afraid. If people challenge you, they say, I think you're this. I think you don't like these kind of people, or you're being judgmental of these kind of people. Don't bristle, get stiff-necked, and say, no, I don't. I'm good in that area. You should always be self-examining, thinking, am I following this? Am I following Jesus' commandment? What is my value hierarchy? How do I see other people? Who am I declaring as my neighbor? Do I have something in me? Maybe it's thoughts, experiences. You were raised in a certain way. Do I need to self-reflect and go, yeah, I should probably be thinking about these people differently? Because that's exactly what this parable is all about. He challenged them with the most despised kind of person they could come up with. And they have to agree. You can almost see it when he says it. The one that showed him mercy. Like he had to hang his head in disgust because his heroes didn't do it and this guy I despise did it. I have to say it's this one. He's the one being the neighbor, right? So that's what that looks like. So I'll finish with a couple of things and kind of key takeaways, but it reminds me of this part of recently watched a documentary about C.S. Lewis and his upbringing, how he was an atheist, came to Christ, and one of the revelations that came to him following his conversion is a two-page thing, so I'll read through it. I'm not going to put an English accent, but it's going to be a little wordy, but it really gets to the heart of love your neighbor, right? It may be possible for each to think too much of his own potential glory hereafter. It is hardly possible for him to think too often or too deeply about that of his neighbor. The load or weight or burden of my neighbor's glory should be laid daily on my back, a load so heavy that only humility can carry it, and the backs of the proud will be broken. It's a serious thing to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses, to remember that the dullest and most uninteresting person you talk to may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, you would be strongly tempted to worship, or else a horror and a corruption such as you now meet, if at all, only in a nightmare. All day long, we are, in some degree, helping each other to one or other of these destinations. It is in the light of these overwhelming possibilities, it is with the awe and circumspection proper to them, that we should conduct all our dealings with one another, all friendships, all loves, all play, all politics. There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilizations, these are mortal, and their life is to ours as the life of a gnat. But it is immortals whom we joke with, work with, marry, snub, and exploit. Immortal horrors or everlasting splendors. This does not mean that we are to be perpetually or always solemn. We must play, but our merriment must be of that kind, and it is in fact the merriest kind, which exists between people who have, from the outset, taken each other seriously. No flippancy, no superiority, no presumption. And our charity must be real and costly love, with deep feeling for the sins in spite of which we love the sinner. No mere tolerance or indulgence which parodies love as flippancy parodies merriment. Next to the Blessed Sacrament itself, your neighbor is the holiest object presented to your senses. So a different take on who is my neighbor. And when I look around at people, this is his revelation after his struggle with, is God real? Is Christ real? And after he comes to that realization, you know, it's kind of one of those things, he sits in church and he looks around. And yeah, they're kind of annoying, but they are not mortals. They are immortal. They are destined for, and it's my burden, my challenge to help them get to one or two places. Which place do I want to help take them, right? And so that's how we interact with our neighbor. And when you see that, you have that vision differently, you look at your neighbor differently. You don't see race, religion, all the, you know, annoyances. You see something way different, right? And so I thought this was a beautiful passage from The Weight of Glory, C.S. Lewis, just something he came to. So in conclusion, I'm going a little bit further than I want. So Luke's gospel, if it is Luke, you know, it fits in with the others and leads into Act, his second volume. It is, I like to think of it as a best of compilation. He features more stories, more detail, more unique items, a lot of the parables that we just, I can't believe they're not in the other ones. So you can just imagine him going and interviewing, and he talks to this guy, and they're like, yeah, I remember this parable. Oh, I gotta write that down. Oh, I remember, but Jesus actually said this. Oh, I gotta write that down, right? And he took good notes on all that. And then Jesus uses the parable of the Good Samaritan to illustrate his upside-down value of God's kingdom and hold up a mirror to ourselves. So I encourage you to use that mirror. Don't break the mirror. Always be self-examining and rid ourselves of these thoughts that have no place in the kingdom of God. So as you look at your neighbor, examine yourself. Am I treating them like God would want me to? And Jesus sees these people. Do I have Jesus' eyes in place of my eyes? And so those are key takeaways from Luke. So I was shooting for 10 minutes early. It's 7 minutes early. So enjoy the ministry fair. Thanks for your attention. See you next week. We're doing John, if you're available. And then after that, the week after that, you get volume 2 of Luke. You'll hear about Acts. So bring all the questions then. So thank you for your time.